Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of November. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. This month, we'll be talking about accessible voting, the midterm elections, and we'll start with Mary Haroyan giving us a rundown of the BSCB Fall Conference. Mary, welcome to Council Connection. It's been a while.
Yes, it has been a little while, Steve, but it's good to be with you. Thank you.
We have conferences in the air here in the fall, and I guess you're kind of have a little bit of something to do with that as the program coordinator.
Yes, the program coordinator, so I'm on the fall conference committee. And so we're working very diligently on finalizing the agenda for the day.
Okay.
The fall conference is scheduled for Saturday, November 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be at the Carroll Center, as it was last year.
Okay.
It'll be in the Technology Center. And so just kind of a rough idea of time. Registration will be between 8:45 and 9:30 that morning.
Mm-hmm. And that's for anybody who didn't pre-register, right?
It's for anyone that didn't pre-register, or for people to come who, you know, registered to pick up their, you know, their lunch ticket.
Oh, right,
and,
of course.
Yes, and just to check in with us to let us know that they're there. Mm-hmm. We do encourage people to pre-register, though, if at all possible, especially for lunch.
Yeah, because if you don't do that, what is it, the Monday before?
By the Monday before,
yeah.
At the very latest, you may not get the lunch choice you want. You know,
yeah.
And if you wait any later, there may not be a lunch available, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. Registration is $20 for the day, and
okay.
That, of course, includes lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll have coffee and some, you know, breakfast pastry in the morning.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no special breaks if you come in on Saturday and say, well, I know I'm not getting a lunch, but do I get a special break? I don't think that applies, right?
It doesn't. No, it's $20
no. Okay.
for the day. Yeah,
so
yeah.
$20, take it or leave it.
Right. And we'll also have a raffle that day as well. So,
mm-hmm. And that's over and above the cost of the ticket, right? I mean,
yes,
that's
yes,
a separate,
raffle, yes.
separate
that's
deal.
That's separate, yes. It's going to be a 50-50 raffle.
Okay.
And so, and people can buy raffle tickets when they come in and register and
mm-hmm.
check in. We'll have Rose Miller, who is our raffle lady, will be selling tickets. It'll be, I think, one ticket for $5 and five for $20.
Yep.
And it'll be a 50-50 raffle, and we also have a couple of donated gift cards as well.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know what a 50-50 raffle is, can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. A 50-50 raffle is such that the winner of the whoever's ticket is pulled, and BSCB will split the cash that was taken in from the ticket sale. So if we collected, you know, $500 in raffle tickets, then the winner will get $250, half of that, and BSCB will keep the other half.
Got it.
Yes. So
well,
it certainly
seems like a reasonable thing to do.
Yes, and it's a fun thing because people
yeah.
know they can win some
right.
cash. Yes,
right.
yes. So we'll have that, and that will be, you know, we'll sell tickets for that in the morning, and then we'll have the drawing at lunchtime.
Okay.
Yes. So those are sort of the fun aspects
mm-hmm.
of the day. And in terms of the program itself for the agenda, we're doing things a little differently this year. You know, typically in the afternoon at our fall conference, we've always had breakout sessions
right.
where people can choose a different workshop mm-hmm. to sign up for. This year, we're not using or going with that format. Instead, we're going to devote the entire afternoon to transportation.
Okay.
So we're going to have speakers and on a variety of topics related to transportation from 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Yes, so I'll talk about that. And then the morning will be our typical general, our typical session in the morning. You know, we'll have a welcome from the Greg Donnelly, who is the Carroll Center president.
Mm-hmm.
And David Kingsbury, who's our fall conference chair, will talk about logistics.
Mm-hmm.
We are also going to have Ira, who will be at our conference. And for anyone who doesn't know about Ira, it is a guidance system, so to speak, where people call in and speak with an agent, and an agent guides people through a set of glasses that people wear, and a phone. And many people are using it.
Now, normally that's a subscription-type program.
It is. It is a subscription, yes. But IRA is actually going to donate at the Carroll Center. They're going to set up a free zone at the Carroll Center from the Wednesday before the fall conference through the weekend. So for anyone that has IRA already, subscribes to it, they'll be able to save their minutes while they're at the Carroll Center.
Right.
For anyone who has never used IRA, they have a chance to use it as a guest, which will be free of charge.
Okay.
So for that day, they'd be able to just download the app, the IRA app, and use it as a guest free of charge and just see how it works.
Right, using their iPhone, or does that work on Android or not?
It does, but, you know, IRA, for this particular, to use it as a guest, you'd have to have an iPhone.
Okay.
I believe, yeah, because the app just works with the iPhone, not with Android. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a wonderful offer from IRA. So they'll be there to speak about it and to introduce IRA to anyone who's not familiar with it, and then give people a chance to download the app. They'll meet with people one-on-one as well during the session to talk more about it. So we'll have IRA on the agenda. We're going to have an introduction to our new website, as you well know.
Yes, I do know about that, because a little voice has been buzzing in my ear, asking me if I would do something about that, and I'm going to do it.
Yes, excellent. Well, you have been working very hard, the Publications Committee working very hard on redesigning our website. So it has really come along, and it's a wonderful...
It certainly has.
So people will have a chance to actually see it.
Yep, we're going to bring a computer in there and we're going to set things up and let everybody see what happens when we go to the various pages and see just what the web folks have been doing hard at work.
Yes, absolutely. So it's going to be great. So hopefully encourage people to go to the website utilize it and get some great information and stay updated on BSCB events as well as advocacy issues and all sorts of things.
And, of course, anybody can take a look at that before the convention. If you want to, you go to www.acbofma, that's acbofma.org, and check out what you're going to see there on Saturday. And by all means, bring your questions, which I hope that some people will have. And I will certainly try and answer those and save the rotten eggs for some other time because I really don't need any more of those than I've already got.
No. Well, people are going to really like the website.
I think they will, too.
To navigate, and we're really building it up to have a lot of great information and a wonderful resource for people. Mm-hmm. So you'll be demonstrating that and having a chance to answer any questions people have.
Right.
We'll have that. And then we're also going to be demonstrating our new phone system, the new Fillmore phone line that we have. So Bob Hache will speak about that. And another wonderful resource for getting information as well as leaving, a voicemail message.
That's right, because that was something we could never do with our other phone system. You could leave messages, but there was no information that you could pick off of the system. And this system, in amongst all the other things it has, you can actually call up and listen to a rebroadcast of Council Connection.
Yes.
Should you miss it on Thursday night?
Yes, absolutely. Listen to that and as well as other information. Leave a voicemail message. And for anyone who would like to know now, the phone line number is, they can call it at any time, the phone number is 773-572-6312. And that is a long-distance number, so you have to dial 1, of course, before the 773.
And people who want to register can also do it by leaving a message on that number, I think.
Yes,
right?
Great. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So absolutely, for anyone who doesn't want to, do the PayPal link and send an email, they can leave a voicemail message on that number, and somebody will call them back. Somebody from the Fall Conference Committee will call them back and take their registration, which is really simple because it's just going to be getting their lunch option for the day. And people can bring a check with them on the day of the conference.
Mm-hmm.
a check for $20 and, yeah. and pay that day. Yes. Yeah. So once again, the phone number is 773-572-6312. So Bob Hesche will demonstrate that also at the conference.
Yeah.
Okay. And we are planning to have a panel of we for sure have somebody coming from Senator Harriet Chandler's office to speak about constituent services.
Okay.
And we are working on diligently getting somebody from hopefully one of our U.S. senators' offices.
Great.
And perhaps even the governor's office to come and speak about what each office has in terms of offers in terms of constituent services. So when you as a constituent need to get in touch with your legislator, what you can expect to have happen in that process. And so we're going to have a panel, and I believe Deanne Elliott will be leading that panel,
mm-hmm.
in the representatives from those offices to speak about that. So we're really excited about that. And in the morning session, we also will have a couple of students who have been ACB scholarship recipients speaking as well. And one is, has been a past BSCB scholarship recipient.
Mm-hmm.
And the other gentleman, I don't think was from Massachusetts, but certainly has been involved with the ACB student group. So we'll hear from them both. And then we have one other item in the morning. Deanne Elliott will be talking about her work with the Harvard Extension Program. So we'll hear about what she's doing there regarding, I believe, digital accessibility.
That's been a big issue for the last, for students in particular, and for us in the last couple of years.
Yep. So that will round out the morning. Then we have the raffle and lunch, and we have several different options for lunch, steak. We have
my personal favorite.
Good. Okay. We have two veggie options, which is great, a nice Mediterranean veggie wrap and Greek salad, chicken Caesar salad, smoked mm-hmm. turkey. So there's a lot of good food.
Yes, and Panera Bread does a great job. They've done this before for us, and the food has been excellent.
Yes.
And, of course, we know that certain people are going to be anxiously awaiting the dessert, which is, I believe, a big cookie of some sort, probably chocolate chip.
Oh, usually it's that. They stick a cookie in the box along with maybe a piece of fruit.
They have been known to do that.
Yeah, and maybe some chips. So, yes. And we will have working hard to get volunteers to help out through the day, to mm-hmm. help with getting people settled in the morning and then helping with lunches, getting people to and from wherever they need to go, to and from the bathroom or
right,
whatever.
Right.
We'll all be really pretty much just in one room. We won't be moving around during the course.
Yeah,
day.
Yeah. And it's all on the first floor at the Carroll Center anyway.
Yeah, very easy place to navigate.
Yes.
Yeah, the
Carroll
Center. Yeah.
Pretty much a straight shot.
It is. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So then in the afternoon, as I said, it's devoted all to transportation starting at 1 o'clock. And Rick Morin will be sort of the MC of the afternoon.
Yep.
And he'll start the session off talking about what the afternoon will be all about and, talking about just basically ADA, you're talking about the ADA guidelines and paratransit. We will have a gentleman by the name of Ben Schutzman, who is the director of the Office of Transportation Access with the MBTA. He'll be there speaking about services and doing a lot of listening, because there's going to be plenty of time for people to ask questions of him.
And that's an important part of all of this, is that this is the place where you get to talk to some of the folks that who normally you might not get a chance to speak
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So they'll hear from people and people have a chance to ask questions. And of course, Rick is so involved with the MBTA and knowledgeable on all this, and he'll
right.
be able to sort of help with the proceedings and make sure that, people get their questions asked and keep things moving.
Mm-hmm.
We also are going to have a woman by the name of Angela Johnson, who is a transportation justice organizer from a coalition called T4 Massachusetts, T standing for Transportation
okay, yes.
for Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And her coalition or organization has been real active with a lot outside of the Boston area. statewide, talking about public transportation, the regional transit authorities. Mm-hmm. They were really integral in getting the budget, settled for the RTAs and getting, you know.
That's been a big issue out in the Worcester area.
Yeah, the Worcester area, the Springfield area. I mean, basically anywhere outside of the MBTA.
Right,
yeah,
right.
The regional transit authorities. And so that coalition was really successful and integral in getting, you know, the budget sort of restored as much as it could be at this point.
Yeah.
But they're really involved with that. So she's going to talk about what this coalition is about, what they're doing. And we'll also have a woman from the Institute of Human-Centered Design speaking, who is involved with universal design.
Ah.
And she's going to be speaking about what's happening with the Green Line upgrades and building accessibility into that new line.
Okay. Yeah, I know they're doing a lot of construction on that, but I don't know just what the details are.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's involved with that, so she'll be able to talk about universal design and, you know, in terms of accessibility with that. So they'll be part of that afternoon session.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also will have Meg Robertson.
Ah, yes.
Director of O&M from the Commission for the Blind.
From the Commission, yeah.
Yes. So she'll kind of round out that afternoon talking about what the commission, how the commission works with people in helping them to sort of assess the different modes of transportation that they can use given different trips they need to make. So people can, you know, maybe can use the fixed route bus and the paratransit service depending upon the trips they need to take.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to talk about how the commission can really work with clients to help them make that assessment and give them the tools they need to decide what's best for them. We know that transportation has always been such an important issue, and it always, this never seems to be enough time to answer all the questions people have. So hopefully this afternoon session will go a long way towards answering a lot of questions and giving people good information.
Well, Mary, thank you for joining us tonight and giving us the lowdown on what I think is going to be another exciting fall conference. I will see you there on Saturday, November 17th.
Yes.
And I hope a lot of other people will be joining us as well.
I hope so, too. Thank you for having me on, Steve.
You're entirely welcome. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find past shows in the Council Connection archive at www.acbfma.org. On November 6th, midterm elections will be held across the United States, and a major concern for those of us with disabilities is our ability to vote accessibly. While this has been the law in Massachusetts for several years, the process is not always uniform. And in an attempt to address that issue, BSCB has developed an online survey. Cheryl Cummings has been active in that process, and here she is to give us an update on how things are going. Cheryl, it's good to have you back on the Council Connection. It's been a little while. And this month, you're wearing a different hat than you usually wear. Last time, I think we talked about coding camp, but we're not talking about that this month, are we?
No. It's nice to be back. It has been a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, I am wearing the hat of the newest Bay State Council of the Blind board member.
Well, congratulations. That's all happened since the last time we talked. And we could probably devote a whole show to that topic, but that's not really why you're here either.
So I'll say this. 2 years ago, the Bay State Council for the Blind, together with the sort of partnership with other organizations that serve folks with disabilities, conducted a survey trying to get input on people's experiences of using the AutoMark terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And also their general experiences of accessibility around your polling site. So this year, with this big midterm election coming up, we thought we would do it again and see if there's been any changes, Have things sort of stayed the same? And I suppose the other thing that's motivating us is that the Automark machine is about 12 years old.
Yeah, so, that's true. It's a venerable, I guess they've been around since 2006, I guess.
Yeah.
I know they've been, well, not when I first moved up here to Reading, but not too long afterwards, they came in and they've had them. I have to say, Reading has been extremely good about their accessibility. They've had the machine at every election. They've always worked. There were a couple of times when some of the people manning the booths and things didn't quite know what was supposed to be happening, but fortunately, it worked out that there was always somebody there who did. And as a result of that, I have been able to use the machine every single time that it's been here. And I'm very happy about that.
And I would say you have been very fortunate.
I've heard that, yeah, because some of the other towns have not been so lucky with the way things have worked or not worked.
Right. And I think part of what we wanted to do with the survey, of course, it's not like statistically sound, but we wanted to be able to add some numbers and give some like real tangible experiences rather than, you know, going to talk, let's see, say with the Secretary of State's office and saying, oh, we've got these stories.
Yeah.
And although stories are important, they still want to know like which polling sites, what are the problems? What are the issues you encountered? And again, this is not a long survey. It's truly, I think it's like 11 questions.
Yes, that's right. I took the survey this afternoon and they say it's about 10 minutes. And I think it probably took me a little bit longer than that. But, you know, their estimate is based on if you were sitting there visually looking at the site. But if you're going through it with a screen reader, you probably want to take a little bit of extra time to make sure that the radio buttons are checked if they need to be checked, or that you're reading everything that you need to read on the screen. The way they do it, for anybody who hasn't done one of these in Survey Monkey, is that they ask you one question on each screen, and you answer the question, and then you have a previous and next button, and you go on to the next question after that. And so You have 11 different screens for 11 different questions.
And there are like one or two questions that are open-ended. So if you do have any stories that you'd like to tell, you can certainly tell us there.
Yes.
And I, as I said, it does ask you to tell like, you know, where did you vote? Whether you did like the early voting, which we all know is now available in Massachusetts from October 22nd till November 2nd. So if you're going to do that, you got till Friday to do it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. For those who've been putting it off, you don't have much time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, actually, I've done several things. I mean, I've done absentee voting. I've done, you know, going the day of. And this year we did early voting. Mm-hmm. So it's been nice to sort of see the sort of differences over, you know, over different experiences of voting.
Yeah, I tried early voting a couple of years ago, and my fear was that they would not have the machine set up. But to Reading's credit, they did. It was there.
Now, as long as it's an election, they're supposed to have the the voting machines. And I want to say the other thing is so many times, I mean, not so, a few times I've walked into the polling site and they're like, oh, my God, you know, basically it's the blind lady. And do you want the machine for the blind? And I suppose what I want to say is that, as we probably know, the Automark is not just for blind people.
No.
You know, it was interesting because as I was using it, I thought, you know what, this might also work for people whose language is not, their first language is not English, because it does translate the ballot. And it might be interesting to see.
Oh, can you select other languages on that? For instance, if you wanted to have it speak to you in Spanish, could you do that?
I think you can.
Oh, okay.
And you might even be able to do Chinese.
Okay. I've never tried that because, you know, I just go to the, I mean, I've gotten so used to doing it that half the time I don't even look at the instructions anymore. I just hit the right arrow and go on to the contests. But
yeah. No, and it's, I mean, I've got to say, this year when I voted, I was like so amazed because the machine was up and running. They had headsets, and it worked.
Yeah, the only concern I had this year was they gave me a ballot that was folded in thirds, yes. And I said, you know, I just hope that it goes in here because if it doesn't, I don't know what I'm going to do. But it did, and the people watching were more concerned that it wasn't going to work than I was. But you know, it was fine.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that I wonder. I suspect that sometimes people go in and if the machine either is not working or if they can't find it, which has also been an issue because, of course, many times it's set up in a corner that's away from whatever precinct you're in. So, you know, in my case, somebody takes me over to the machine and sometimes the clerk or the person at the table will say, well, where are you going? You're going out of the precinct. And we're going, yeah, we're going to use the machine. It's not in the precinct. But I wonder if there's a tendency of people, if the machine doesn't work, to then just say, all right, I'll just have somebody fill it out and maybe not register a complaint with anybody.
That's a good question. I know that I've certainly ended up having people help me fill out the ballot. And in that instance, it's been quite a public vote.
Yes. Not my favorite way to do things at all.
Yeah. And I do complain. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know you can call the Disability Law Center and you can certainly call, you know, whatever election department is in your town and you can call the Secretary of State's office. If you have a problem with the ballot. So, I mean, the survey is one way you can sort of, you know, describe and talk about your experience. But to really do a formal complaint, you need to go through to the, like, as I said, City Hall where you are or the town clerk or to the Disability Law Center or to the Secretary of State's office.
And they do make that very clear in the survey, by the way, that if you want to do more than just take the survey, that there are things that you can do. So they tell you that right up front.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So, and I mean, and you know, and I think if you've never tried it before, I would encourage you to give it a try if you go to your polling site. Because in as much as, you know, the machines may be 12 years old, et cetera. We need people to use the machines.
Well, they still seem to be the most reliable of all of the different accessible voting options that people have. The scuttlebutt that I've heard from different places looking on the leadership list in some of those places is that some of the other machines in use are just not nearly as good. So I think, again, it's an oldie but a goodie, and as long as it works, I'm perfectly willing to continue to use something that I know is going to be reliable and will do exactly what we need it to do.
That, yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, I don't know what the alternatives are, so I don't know. But I know so far I've heard at least two stories, people who the machine wasn't working as well as it should. So I've already encouraged those folks to, you know, complete the survey and to make formal complaints because we need to make sure that the Secretary of State's office knows this.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons to me, anyway, that it's important for all of us to get out and vote, I mean, aside from the usual kind of stuff that you hear about, you know, if you don't vote, you'd have no right to complain, all of which I agree with. But one of the big reasons for me to keep voting is I want to make sure that that machine is always there and that they know somebody's going to use it. Because, you know, human nature being what it is, if they don't see people using the machine, they may tend to get a little lax about the way they're supposed to set it up, even if the law requires that they do so. There's nothing that says they're going to continue to do that if they think nobody's going to come in anyway.
I think you're right. I mean, you know, and not only I think there you know, it'll be like people won't set it up. I think even the maintenance, the quality of the maintenance
that's
will
right.
suffer.
That's exactly
because
right.
It's like, well, why do we need to fix this? Nobody's yeah. using it.
And I have heard stories of that people come in and they go, oh, my God, we thought it was tested and it wasn't tested. And, you know, on and on it goes. But again, I've been very lucky where I am.
Well, I'm going to, you know, I want to encourage again everybody to take the survey. We will be distributing the survey via email.
Good.
And if you have any questions or you may need assistance with the survey, you can call the Bay State Council of the Blind phone and leave a message and somebody will get back to you.
Yes. And we'll be giving that number at the end of the show just because we usually do. And Cheryl, thank you again for telling us about this. This is a very important thing. You know, first get out and vote, then take the survey. And I can't emphasize enough how important this is.
Thank you, Steve, for the opportunity. Because like you, I totally want everybody to get out and vote because it is so important.
Absolutely.
And then once you vote, take the survey.
And Owen, by the way, congratulations on the video that you were in.
Oh, thank you. Do you notice there's a theme? Something about voting?
Well, I noticed that so much that we're actually going to play said video right after we finish this interview.
Marvelous. Thank you. That's
all
it.
Right.
It was a nice experience.
Yes, and enjoyable to listen to as well. Take care, Cheryl, and thanks for being with us tonight.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
If you have difficulty with accessible voting in your town, it's important to register your concerns with the town clerk. And if you need further assistance, you can contact the Secretary of State Elections Division at 617-727-2828. If you need additional help or further information, contact the Disability Law Center at 617-723-8455. You may not think it's important to vote, but our individual voices really do count. And this video produced by the Disability Law Center tells us why. Of course, it features, among others, our own Cheryl Cummings.
It's important for people with disabilities to vote because for too long, we've been on the sidelines.
People with disabilities are still people. They still have a say. They still have opinions.
Very often, they are marginalized and unheard.
As a person with a disability, I want to know that the politicians I elect have my best interest in mind.
It's one of the ways we have to let our preferences be known.
It's super important that people with disabilities are visible.
If there are strong waves of people with disabilities showing up to the polls, we can make an impact on how an election plays out.
Through our votes, we can help our politicians to understand what our priorities are, and they will remember that we're here.
We need to reshape the way politicians think in every single bill and every single piece of legislation that they create.
By voting, that's one way we can say, I have a voice in what my community does and says.
My vote matters and will end up affecting policy.
Your vote is incredibly important.
One vote can make a difference.
We want to participate in our democracy.
My name is Cheryl, and my disability vote counts.
My name is Jenny, and my disability vote counts.
My name is Shoshana, and my disability vote counts.
My name is Shaya, and the disability vote counts.
My name is Mayor, and my disability vote counts.
My name is Richard, and I believe the disability vote counts.
My name is Caitlin, and my disability vote counts.
Just as important as the candidates running for office are the three ballot questions that we have to deal with this year. So let's listen to this summary of the questions, as well as arguments pro and con. This recording was produced by the Perkins Library and is available on audio cartridge. If you're not on the list, it's worth your while, I think, to give them a call at 617 972-7240, so you can take advantage of this service in the future.
Question 1. Law proposed by initiative petition. Patient-to-nurse limits. Do you approve of a law summarized below, on which no vote was taken by the Senate or the House of Representatives on or before May 2, 2018? Summary. As required by law, summaries are written by the State Attorney General. This proposed law would limit how many patients could be assigned to each registered nurse in Massachusetts hospitals and certain other healthcare facilities. The maximum number of patients per registered nurse would vary by type of unit and level of care as follows. In units with step-down intermediate care patients, 3 patients per nurse. In units with post-anesthesia care or operating room patients, 1 patient under anesthesia per nurse, 2 patients post-anesthesia per nurse. In the emergency services department, 1 critical or intensive care patient per nurse, or 2 if the nurse has assessed each patient's condition as stable, 2 urgent non-stable patients per nurse, 3 urgent stable patients per nurse, or 5 non-urgent stable patients per nurse. In units with maternity patients, A. Active labor patients, 1 patient per nurse. B. During birth and for up to 2 hours immediately postpartum, 1 mother per nurse and 1 baby per nurse. C. When the condition of the mother and baby are determined to be stable, 1 mother and her baby or babies per nurse. D. Postpartum, 6 patients per nurse. E. Immediate care or continuing care babies, 2 babies per nurse. F. Well babies, 6 babies per nurse. In units with pediatric, medical, surgical, telemetry, or observational/outpatient treatment patients, or any other unit, 4 patients per nurse. And in how to register to vote, online tools, early and absentee voting, military and overseas voters, voting on election limits without reducing its level of nursing, service, maintenance, clerical, professional, and other staff. The proposed law would also require every covered facility to develop a written patient acuity tool for each unit to evaluate the condition of each patient. This tool would be used by nurses to decide whether patient limits should be lower than the limits of the proposed law at any given time. The proposed law would not override any contract in effect on January 1, 2019 that set higher patient limits. The proposed law's limits would take effect after any such contract expired. The State Health Policy Commission would be required to promulgate regulations to implement the proposed law. The commission would conduct inspections to ensure compliance with the law. Any facility receiving written notice from the commission of a complaint or a violation would be required to submit a written compliance plan to the commission. The commission could report violations to the State Attorney General, who could file suit to obtain a civil penalty of up to $25,000 per violation, as well as up to $25,000 for each day a violation continued after the commission notified the covered facility of the violation. The Health Policy Commission would be required to establish a toll-free telephone number for complaints and a website where complaints, compliance plans, and violations would appear. The proposed law would prohibit discipline or retaliation against any employee for complying with the patient assignment limits of the law. The proposed law would require every covered facility to post within each unit, patient room, and waiting area a notice explaining the patient limits and how to report violations. Each day of a facility's noncompliance with the posting required would be punishable by a civil penalty between $250 and $2,500. The proposed law's requirements would be suspended during a state or nationally declared public health emergency. The proposed law states that if any of its parts were declared invalid, the other parts would stay in effect. The proposed law would take effect on January 1, 2019. What your vote will do. As required by law, the statements describing the effect of a yes or no vote were written jointly by the State Attorney General and the Secretary of the Commonwealth. A yes vote would limit the number of patients that could be assigned to one registered nurse in hospitals and certain other healthcare facilities. A no vote would make no change in current laws relative to patient-to-nurse limits. Statement of fiscal consequences. As required by law, statements of fiscal consequences are written by the Executive Office of Administration and Finance. This proposed law may affect both state and municipal revenues and expenditures, with state-owned hospitals required to expend between an estimated $67,800,000 and $74,800,000 annually to comply with the proposed law, and the Health Policy Commission required to expend an estimated $1,281,200 annually to monitor compliance. There will also be an impact on MassHealth, the state's Medicaid program, and state-funded employee and retiree health care obligations to the extent that the initiative increases hospital costs or causes hospital closures. The overall fiscal consequences to state and municipal finances, however, are difficult to project due to the lack of reliable data. Arguments. As provided by law, the 150-word arguments are written by proponents and opponents of each question and reflect their opinions. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts does not endorse these arguments and does not certify the truth or accuracy of any statement made in these arguments. The names of the individuals and organizations who wrote each argument and any written comments by others about each argument are on file in the Office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth. In favor. I have worked as a bedside nurse for 40 years. I joined nurses from across Massachusetts to write this law and place safe patient limits on the ballot to improve the quality of patient care in Massachusetts hospitals. Independent scientific studies have consistently found that quality of care decreases dramatically when nurses are forced to care for too many patients at once, putting patients at increased risk for complications like pneumonia, medication errors, and more. This initiative establishes a safe maximum limit for the number of patients assigned to nurses in all hospital areas to ensure our patients receive the care and attention they need. It provides maximum flexibility, requiring hospitals to adjust registered nurse staffing levels based on the needs of patients, and does so without reducing other members of the healthcare workforce. A recent survey found that 86% of registered nurses in Massachusetts favor this question. Donna Kelly Williams, RN, Massachusetts Nurses Association, 340 Turnpike Street, Canton, Massachusetts, 02021, 781-821-4625, extension 777, www.safepatientlimits.org. Against. Nurses are asking you to vote no on question one. Massachusetts hospitals rank among the best in the nation, but question one will put that patient care quality and safety at risk. It forces rigid, government-imposed nurse staffing ratios at every hospital, overriding the professional judgment of nurses and doctors. Question one would create a massive, unfunded government mandate costing more than $1 billion in higher healthcare costs annually, causing community hospitals to close and forcing others to reduce emergency, addiction, and behavioral health services. Question one has been called the most irresponsible approach to healthcare. There is no scientific evidence that these rigid ratios improve patient care. Question one, higher costs, rigid mandates, and one-size-fits-all healthcare. Nurses and over 100 healthcare organizations, including American Nurses Association Massachusetts, Massachusetts Medical Society, Massachusetts College of Emergency Physicians, and every Massachusetts hospital, urge vote no on question one. Amanda S. Oberles, RN, Coalition to Protect Patient Safety, P.O. Box 15, Boston, MA 02137, 617-840-3465, www.protectpatientsafety.com. Question 2. Law proposed by initiative petition. Commission on Limiting Election Spending and Corporate Rights. Do you approve of a law summarized below, on which no vote was taken by the Senate or the House of Representatives on or before May 2, 2018? Summary. As required by law, summaries are written by the State Attorney General. This proposed law would create a Citizens Commission to consider and recommend potential amendments to the United States Constitution to establish that corporations do not have the same constitutional rights as human beings, and that campaign contributions and expenditures may be regulated. Any resident of Massachusetts who is a United States citizen would be able to apply for appointment to the 15-member commission, and members would serve without compensation. The governor, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, the State Attorney General, the Speaker of the State House of Representatives, and the President of the State Senate would each appoint 3 members of the Commission and, in making these appointments, would seek to ensure that the Commission reflects a range of geographic, political, and demographic backgrounds. The Commission would be required to research and take testimony and then issue a report regarding 1. The impact of political spending in Massachusetts, 2. Any limitations on the state's ability to regulate corporations and other entities in light of Supreme Court decisions that allow corporations to assert certain constitutional rights, 3. Recommendations for constitutional amendments, 4. An analysis of constitutional amendments introduced to Congress, and 5. Recommendations for advancing proposed amendments to the United States Constitution. The Commission would be subject to the state open meeting law and public records law. The Commission's first report would be due December 31, 2019, and the Secretary of the Commonwealth would be required to deliver the Commission's report to the state legislature, the United States Congress, and the President of the United States. The proposed law states that if any of its parts were declared invalid, the other parts would stay in effect. The proposed law would take effect on January 1, 2019. What your vote will do. As required by law, the statements describing the effect of a yes or no vote are written jointly by the State Attorney General and the Secretary of the Commonwealth. A yes vote would create a Citizens Commission to advance an amendment to the United States Constitution to limit the influence of money in elections and establish that corporations do not have the same rights as human beings. A no vote would not create this commission. Statement of Fiscal Consequences. As required by law, statements of fiscal consequences are written by the Executive Office of Administration and Finance. The proposed law has no discernible fiscal consequences for state and municipal government finances. Arguments. As provided by law, the 150-word arguments are written by proponents and opponents of each question and reflect their opinions. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts does not endorse these arguments and does not certify the truth or accuracy of any statement made in these arguments. The names of the individuals and organizations who wrote each argument and any written comments by others about each argument are on file in the Office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth. In favor. A yes vote advances an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to limit the influence of money in elections and ensure all Americans have an equal voice in our democracy. Behind our nation's challenges is a crisis of billionaires and special interests using money to buy access and influence with politicians. These special interests are well represented, while most Americans are not. The Supreme Court says that laws limiting political spending violate the First Amendment. Most Americans know this is incorrect. Money is not speech. It is power, and concentrated power requires checks and balances. 75% of Americans, including liberals and conservatives, support this amendment to correct the court, with 19 states and over 200 Massachusetts communities formally calling for it. This measure creates a nonpartisan, unpaid citizens' commission to be the people's advocate for this amendment, with commissioners serving with no cost to taxpayers. Jeff Clements, People Govern, Not Money, 33 Bradford Street, Concord, Mass., 01742, 978-254-6275, vote yes on to ma.org. VOTEYESON, the numeral 2, MA.org. Against. The controversy surrounding the Citizens United decision hinges on our cherished right to freedom of speech. In the decision, the court ruled to expand that freedom and apply it equally to all entities and organizations, rather than just the arbitrary list of winners and losers selected by elected officials in previous campaign finance laws. This is a good thing. The First Amendment protection of our freedom of speech is one of the pillars of our democracy and should be preserved and expanded at every possible opportunity. The less government standing in the way of the exercise of that right, the stronger it is. However, even if you disagree with the Citizens United decision, an amendment to the United States Constitution is a dangerous and misguided way to go about undoing it. Please vote no on this question. Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance, 18 Tremont Street, Suite 527, Boston, Mass. 02108. www.massfiscal.org, www.massfiscalscorecard.org. Question 3. Referendum on an existing law. Transgender anti-discrimination. Do you approve of a law summarized below, which was approved by the House of Representatives and the Senate on July 7, 2016? Summary. As required by law, summaries are written by the State Attorney General. This law adds gender identity to the list of prohibited grounds for discrimination in places of public accommodation, resort, or amusement. Such grounds also include race, color, religious creed, national origin, sex, disability, and ancestry. A place of public accommodation, resort, or amusement is defined in existing law as any place that is open to and accepts or solicits the patronage of the general public, such as hotels, stores, restaurants, theaters, sports facilities, and hospitals. Gender identity is defined as a person's sincerely held gender-related identity, appearance, or behavior, whether or not it is different from that traditionally associated with the person's physiology or assigned sex at birth. This law prohibits discrimination based on gender identity in a person's admission to or treatment in any place of public accommodation. The law requires any such place that has separate areas for males and females, such as restrooms, to allow access to and full use of those areas consistent with a person's gender identity. The law also prohibits the owner or manager of a place of public accommodation from using advertising or signage that discriminates on the basis of gender identity. This law directs the State Commission Against Discrimination to adopt rules or policies and make recommendations to carry out this law. The law also directs the State Attorney General to issue regulations or guidance on referring for legal action any person who asserts gender identity for an improper purpose. The provisions of this law governing access to places of public accommodation are effective as of October 1, 2016. The remaining provisions are effective as of July 8, 2016. What your vote will do. As required by law, the statements describing the effect of a yes or no vote are written jointly by the State Attorney General and the Secretary of the Commonwealth. A yes vote would keep in place the current law, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender identity in places of public accommodation. A no vote would repeal this provision of the public accommodation law. Statement of fiscal consequences. As required by law, statements of fiscal consequences are written by the Executive Office of Administration and Finance. The proposed repeal of the existing law has no discernible material fiscal consequences for state and municipal government finances. Arguments. As provided by law, the 150-word arguments are written by proponents and opponents of each question and reflect their opinions. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts does not endorse these arguments and does not certify the truth or accuracy of any statement made in these arguments. The names of the individuals and organizations who wrote each argument and any written comments by others about each argument are on file in the Office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth. In favor. Vote yes to keep in place current law that keeps Massachusetts welcoming and fair, prevents discrimination in places like stores, restaurants, and hospitals, protects transgender youth and adults, lets transgender people go about their daily lives, including in restrooms, which we all need to use. We all value safety and privacy, including transgender people. This law has been in place for 2 years with no increase in public safety incidents. Harassing people remains illegal, and those who commit crimes are still prosecuted. That's why experts who support the law include law enforcement, including the Massachusetts Chiefs of Police Association and Massachusetts Major Crime Chiefs of Police, women's organizations and the Massachusetts Coalition Against Sexual Assault and Domestic Violence, the Massachusetts Parent-Teacher Association. Transgender people are our neighbors, coworkers, and friends who contribute to our thriving communities. A yes vote upholds basic values of fairness, dignity, and respect for all. Susan Donnelly, Freedom for All Massachusetts, www.freedommassachusetts.org. Against. Voting no repeals the bathroom bill law and prevents men from entering women's bathrooms, locker rooms, dressing rooms, and intimate spaces. The law violates the privacy and safety of women by allowing any man identifying as a woman, including convicted sex offenders, to share women's facilities. Under the law, any attempt to block a man from entering a woman's locker room, dressing room, or bathroom could result in individual penalties of up to $50,000 and a year in prison. Businesses are also affected, like a female spa owner who faced a discrimination claim for declining to wax the genitals of a man identifying as a woman. No law should make women and girls feel unsafe and exploit their privacy and security. The MA legislature passed a law that goes too far, even refusing to include a provision to exclude convicted sex offenders. A no vote protects women's privacy and safety. Debbie Dugan, Keep MA Safe, 400 Trade Center Suite 1950, Woburn, Mass. 01801. 339-298-7567. www.keepmasafe.org.
And that brings us to the end of another edition of Council Connection. If you have any questions or comments about the show, or if you want assistance with registration for the BSCB Fall Conference, please leave us a message in the BSCB Fillmore box at 773-572-6312. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, hoping to see many of you at the Fall Conference on November 17th. And inviting you to join us again in December when we'll return with another Council Connection. Take care.